to Late Night Loud. Hi, I'm Natasha Mitchell. Tonight on the program, we're losing the plot, selling out, and going techno-mad. But not all at once. And you'll meet Metabass and Breath, who will be doing the loud thing live later on in the program. But let's keep on track. Nomadic communities have been doing that for centuries, etching their pathways into the landscape. But as we head for the new millennium, there's a new breed of compulsive travellers out there. They call themselves technomads, and they're navigating the world using low-tech vehicles, by foot, boat or bike, uploading their travel tales to the World Wide Web as they go. It's a lifestyle which is physically rootless, but wired into an electronic home on the internet. But I'm wondering, where does a person without a home, but with a homepage, belong? Well, joining me in the studio is Adam Sabir. Adam is a filmmaker and has just completed his documentary master's degree at the Australian Film, Television and Radio School. His graduating documentary was called Technomad, a virtually verite journey. And on the line from Washington State is Steve Roberts. Steve gave birth to the word technomad in the late 80s and has been one for over 14 years. Author of Computing Across America, he now runs the Nomadic Research Labs, which are devoted to the pursuit of what he calls nomadness. Steve, what do you mean by the pursuit of nomadness? What is nomadness?
Well, this is something that sort of fell out of my life a number of years ago when I realized I was doing things I didn't like to pay for things I didn't want. And I needed to find a method of traveling full-time while making my physical location irrelevant. And so nomadness, in its very broadest sense for me, is just the act of being nomadic. But technomadness is using the tools of networking and computers to allow me to be anywhere at all.
Okay, well, yeah, fill us in on the word technomad. It's a bit of jargon. Tell us about it. Who is a technomad?
It's funny that you mentioned that, because that's been a topic of discussion on our Technomads mailing list recently. It seems to have gotten a reputation of being a word that is limited to people operating under human power, because, you know, I started all this with a computerized bicycle. But really, I think it's much more general than that, I guess we can call it anything we want since we're inventing the term. And that is being able to travel full-time, essentially rootless, no physical home, no walls, no land, with your sense of home defined by a completely electronically delivered suite of tools. So I live on the Internet. My home is the Internet.
You've said something along the lines of a business traveler, for example, not being a true nomad. How is a technomad a true nomad? What is a true nomad?
Well, I bet you could get a lot of answers to that question in this context, and I wouldn't presume to define this for other people, but I see one fundamental difference as traveling full-time rather than taking a lot of trips. You know, if your business sends you abroad a lot and you spend a lot of time on airplanes, I would define that as a very different situation, because you're going back and forth from a fixed resource that you just operate by remote control. From the situation we're talking about here, which is completely severing all routes and living in some sort of nomadic context, using these tools to keep you connected.
But I guess historically nomads didn't travel all the time, or in fact by themselves. They traveled given routes with other people, and they stayed in one place at least for a time.
Oh yeah, that's a completely different situation, and I wouldn't say that this new phenomenon of technomadics is necessarily a direct outgrowth of the nomadics of you know, many thousands of years tradition. Moving around with animals, finding new grazing grounds, you know, all the other reasons that nomadic peoples have existed, really satisfies a different set of needs. This is more, almost satisfying that restless itch to keep exploring, you know, because what triggers this is when you start living on the net, and I noticed this way back in the 80s, all of a sudden you get this real global awareness of your neighborhood. I mean, I started having friends all over the place, and I started wondering why I couldn't just wander around and drop in on them freely, rather than be stuck in my little house in Ohio wishing I was someplace else.
Well, yes, take me back to that time when you actually decided, I guess, to become what later became defined as a technomad. It was some 14 years ago now. You've described the decision as one of pushing the reset button in your life.
Right. That was a rather grand sensation, actually. Well, it struck me one day. I was in a suburban house in Columbus, Ohio, and this is a place that's just surrounded by cornfields, and every direction is more interesting. And I guess I'm not working for the Columbus, Ohio Chamber of Commerce. But I started realizing that my whole life had become one of doing things that I didn't really enjoy much anymore, trying to pay for things I really didn't want. Well, that's kind of dumb. You know, I mean, do I spend my whole life trying to make payments on things I don't want? So I started looking at the options, and just fortuitously, I mean, I happened to be in the right place at the right time. I had a net connection, a laptop computer, solar power, recumbent bicycles, and the implications were obvious. As a freelance writer, my product has no mass, so there's really no reason for me to be in any one place. I don't need to own a desk and have a piece of real estate. I've come full circle, but I'll tell you about that later.
Well, an interesting point for me on that is you traveled the world on a high-tech bike with lots of computer connections. This is pretty expensive stuff. How did you finance yourself? It's a costly operation we're talking about here.
Well, there were two ways. One, my cash flow pretty much came from freelance writing, which was what I was doing to begin with. So I already had a profession that involved essentially manipulating information and pushing buttons in the right order. You know, I whip out a laptop computer and hit a bunch of keys and people hopefully send me money. When you look at it that way, it really gets abstract. But in addition, I stumbled into something just by virtue of this project that happened to fall into the public eye fairly early on. I started getting a lot of sponsors, and I avoided cash sponsorship and the whole business of, you know, selling decal space and all that. That's way tacky as far as I'm concerned. But I had a lot of companies donate equipment, which eliminated the need to go out and write checks. So I had sort of tread that fine line between selling out and working too hard.
Well, it all sounds pretty crazy. Adam, you've recently made a film about a technomad. What was it, I guess, about technomadic lifestyles that intrigued you, that wanted you to make this film?
Oh, well, I suppose like most people I know, I didn't actually know what technomad meant or was. I've never heard of it. And this chap called Roberto rolled up on my doorstep one evening, and he was fairly average looking. He rode a bicycle which was absolutely jam-packed with bits and pieces. But, you know, apart from that, he wasn't wearing satellite dish on his head or anything to make him stand out. And he told me he'd cycled around the globe, and, you know, we got talking. And then about halfway through the evening, it suddenly occurred to me that, you know, like as Steve said, his only home was his homepage on the web. And I think that's at the point at which it suddenly clicked. You know, here was traditional nomadism suddenly going full circle. Well, perhaps not so suddenly. I suppose it's gradual evolution, although whether it's a logical one remains to be seen. And it just struck me as quite significant that, the first world had reached the point where the very technology that I suppose you might say was used to subjugate traditional nomads was now allowing a strand of nomadism in the first world. So, Roberto and I sort of came to an agreement to head up north of Australia because he was traveling that way anyway. And we thought we'd make a film in this area because I was particularly, I sort of pushed him in that direction because I was particularly interested in song lines, of course, having read Bruce Chatwin's fantastic book. And I wondered whether there was possibly some link to be drawn between the way song lines cross the country and act as kind of data routes, I suppose you might say, and the way that technomads seem to travel through the landscape, which is something like clicking on hypertext links on the World Wide Web. There seemed to be a strange sort of analogy there in the way that you could read the land with very different perceptions, but also be travelling physically in it, which is what technomads do that sort of sets them apart from these armchair virtual travellers.
So you obviously had your own kind of, in your imagination, you had your own concept, your own, I guess, embodiment of what technomadic lifestyles were about. So you went to make a film about this technomad. Tell me what happened.
It actually got me into quite a bit of trouble having these preconceptions. I mean, I mentioned before about, not rolling up with a satellite dish on his head, but I mean, I think I went up there expecting there to be some kind of something extremely visual but almost bordering on the science fiction. I wanted to make a science fiction documentary that also sort of meditated upon this idea of technological nomadism. But in the event of it, I mean, the first bit of filming we tried to do was to get this chap out on his bicycle cycling along just outside Kununurra with all his gizmos on his bicycle, and about a minute into it, his tyres burst in the heat.
Oh, no.
At which point I realised that perhaps this was actually becoming a film about the gap between reality and fantasy. So I suppose the way I had to solve that was back at film school to stage a whole sequence against blue screen with a very futuristically designed traveller who embodied what perhaps I thought a technomad might stand for or might look like in the future, and juxtapose that with what I found down there. And so it became a reflexive film, I suppose. My expectations and Roberto's expectations, he felt that he'd been asked to play something that he wasn't. And I suppose the moral of it was, you know, you can't say to anybody that you are going to be categorised by this word technomad. It's like it's this dangerous thing about calling particular people nomads. I mean, it can easily become a term of derision, you know, implying that people wander aimlessly and have no attachment to the land or anything. Whereas it's better, to talk about nomadism as a practice, and thus get around some of those sort of problems.
Mm. So, did you go on, Steve?
Sorry, we're just yuppie hobos.
Steve, have you had people respond to you as being that way, as being, I guess, people who are kind of, middle-class obsessives with technology and travelling?
There have been a lot of interesting responses. There have been places, I remember once pedaling through a very rich neighbourhood in Florida where, you know, people see my bicycle and packs and they kind of lock their doors because I might be dangerous, you know. And then other places where I sort of became symbolic of what could be done with all of these things that people are sticking all over their desks and in cars and in briefcases. So I think Adam made a good point, is that when a lot of this really just reflects people's dreams. You know, everybody's dreams are different, and life is just a crystallization of those dreams. And you know, my particular set of dreams and push buttons happens to equal this formula that I've found. But, you know, I think it's dangerous to apply the word technomad too widely and expect it to be a movement or a specific pattern of behavior. It's a practice. It's a thing that you can do to decouple from physical life a little bit and be far freer than we've ever been able to be before.
So, Steve, who isn't a technomad and who decides?
Oh, I don't know. nothing formal about it. I just coined the word to apply to myself a long time ago, and then I started a listserv on the net called Technomads because I found a lot of people were sharing the interest. And on the mailing list, I think there are maybe around 400 people, of whom maybe 10 or 15% are actually really active travelers, and others are people who are working on it or wish to be or are just interested in the technology. I've long since given up on trying to categorize anybody, so if people think the word applies to them, then they're certainly welcome to use it. But it's not like I have an organization with entry requirements or anything like that.
I'm interested, Steve, as a technomad, I guess, hearing what you give to the places you travel to. What is it that you contribute as you're moving through, I guess, the physical landscape?
Oh, that's interesting. That's something my parents never understood about this. There's, I guess, a couple of levels here. One is when visiting people, I suppose the worst case would be going around and depending upon people to take care of you and always looking for places to sleep. That's sort of the oversimplified view. What happens, and this is an ancient tradition, is the wanderer, the storyteller, the bringer of news from afar, or the bringer of new technologies, ends up giving back to the community just as much as he takes. And in a very modern context, I found that happening quite a lot. I would show up someplace, they'd throw a party, they'd bring all their friends from work over, and we'd have this wonderful evening of brainstorming, which was very bi-directional, because I eventually move the bike from foreground to background and then start to learn what they do, and information takes on a deeper exchange. That's pretty much it. I'm traveling as a generalist among specialists, and I couldn't do what I do without specialists. And specialists need generalists in order to cross-pollinate.
You've mentioned their technomad websites that we can all find on the web. I guess that's one way of representing yourself to the world, but in a way, I guess, it can be a creative way of representing yourself, but it could also possibly be a bit fabricated. I'm interested in hearing both of your thoughts on this.
Well, mine, I started all this from a print perspective, and I used the network as a means of communication with friends and with my base office. And only in the last, 6 years or so have I had a real web presence. I've always done online publishing, but it's been sort of a small mailing list to that relatively tiny percentage of humanity that was net connected. Well, that's changing, obviously. So I'm trying to keep it as general and accessible as I can.
I wouldn't say that it's necessarily fabricated in response to what you said, Natasha, but I'm basing this on a knowledge of a very specific technomad, and I can't generalize like Steve says. There's no point in doing that. But it seemed that technomads... the technomad I knew seemed to shelter in the web. It was very strange. I felt like that... he was very emotionally detached from the world. I mean, we got into this amazing discussion en route about emoticons. I don't know if you've heard of these. These are strange little punctuation symbols that people insert in emails, and that Steve and I have actually inserted in the emails between each other during the making of this film, I have to admit. But it seemed very strange to me that somebody could sort of divest their emotions into this tiny little symbol, and this person was, you know, communicating with their family as a matter of preference by email rather than telephoning. Obviously, it was cheaper, but it was just because I think he saw emotional contact now as a matter of information transfer. And, you know, it made me feel a bit uneasy to consider that, you know, life could be reduced to just information transfer. And when we got to, you know, various places, there seemed to be a real emptiness of connection. I mean, Steve sounds like he travels with a very definite, well, not so much a purpose, but an intent to learn. But I just wonder if people aren't becoming a bit more sort of cloistered by the net.
Yes, at one point in your film, I understand that Roberto's email connection failed, or you couldn't get an email connection. And I remember him saying in the film that he felt diminished and cut off without his email.
Yeah, it was quite astonishing to see his face. I mean, he really was looking forward to re-establishing contact with the community. I mean, Steve mentions that, you know, you can travel and make place irrelevant. Well, that's assuming that you can stay in touch with your community. And he was totally cut off in a very alien landscape with a filmmaker who was prodding him with pitchforks to do something interesting. And, yeah, it was quite a poignant moment, and he did have to wait another 1,000 kilometres or something before he could find a place with the technology that allowed him to use his cellular phone to connect to the internet. But, I mean, Steve has often talked about this, that technomads are limited, I think you say, Steve, in that they can't actually go outside where the technology exists to allow them to log on. Isn't that so?
Oh yes, it's. I mean, I'm also very cut off if there's if something breaks in the net connection. I see the net connection as it's something that should be right up there in Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, a long time ago, I think it was Alvin Toffler described something he called the enclave of stability, which is all that stuff that makes you feel stable. You know, your home, your car, your friends, whatever. And you know, when you move to the net, when you start actually disconnecting yourself physically and living via the net, that whole enclave of stability moves to that medium. But it's not as hampered as it may seem by the thin bandwidth. And case in point, my partner, his name Lisa, and we fell in love electronically via the net last year. We met on March 23rd via email. She was researching modern-day nomads, in fact. And Adam, I think you may have corresponded with her. Over a period of 7 weeks, we exchanged 1.2 megabytes of email. It became very...
Is that your quantification of passion, Steve?
Yes, it's not that. Well, she flew from London and joined me in California, and now we're living and traveling together. So, you know, a tremendous amount of emotional content can be delivered via this medium. And it doesn't have to be reduced to a very small subset of little mini faces, you know, the emoticons. I mean, those are more like softening agents, you know, and things to impart a little extra chuckle. But the real text and the real context of what you're saying is delivered in the words, which incidentally is an interesting cultural phenomenon, because in traditional physical space, the divisions between people are defined by physical barriers, the way people look or smell or feel or talk or whatever. On the net, it's the way you spell, the way you express your thoughts. And so it's a much more intellectual medium in that sense. I don't mean that in a, you know, superior sort of way, but it's defined by communication tools rather than your immediate physical senses.
Adam, you've suggested that the technomad could even perhaps be a prototype for a truly global citizen. What's that? What is a global citizen?
I think this is something I put in my treatment to get the backing of the film school to make this thing, actually.
Well, Steve, perhaps you've got a taking on that.
Well, radio waves and satellite communications and electrons really have no respect or awareness of national borders. That was one of the first things that struck me way back in the early 80s when I started doing email and living on the net was, gosh, somebody who's in, you know, England or Sydney or whatever is just as close to me as somebody who's right around the corner. And so all the traditional notions of geography just completely fall apart. And so global, of course. Those who are far away are those who are not net connected. Communicating with my father is much more difficult and time consuming because he doesn't have email, and I have to actually go through the entire arcane process of getting things on paper and then having them physically transported 2,000 miles.
But does that make, I guess, the global citizen a pretty unattainable achievement for most people in the world? Most people don't necessarily have an internet connection. A lot of people don't even have access to a bike.
That's true, but that slowly is changing. I think, you know, the net, at least in the areas that I've been seeing, and I mean, there's huge parts of the world where this is not the case. I mean, this may be a, you know, Silicon Valley cultural elitism here, but you know, at least in the United States, the distribution of the net among the general population has happened. I mean, people who you never would think of as being computer geeks are wandering all over the place, sending email and browsing the web, and I think it's only a matter of time. It's just getting cheaper and cheaper, and you don't need, you know, whiz-bang fancy computers to do this, and you certainly don't need a high-tech bicycle. There's a lot of other means of travel that allow you to be a technomad, including your own 2 feet.
When I was making this film, somebody said to me, do you realize, I mean, you're living in such an incredibly rarefied world discussing just this strange phenomenon of technomadism when 80% of the world's population has never placed a phone call? And it suddenly struck me that, yeah.
Astonishing, yeah. Although, you know, there's an interesting thing that's just on the verge of happening, which I predict will have a sweeping effect. One of the reasons that such a large part of the world is not connected is that the infrastructure, which is, you know, billions of dollars worth of stuff, just doesn't exist and probably won't for the foreseeable future. However, all of that is being bypassed with constellations of low-Earth orbit satellites, many of which have already been launched but not yet turned on for public use. Iridium, Teledesic, Globalstar, hundreds of satellites are popping up there to bring cellular phone-like voice communications and, you know, 28.8 or better modem communications to the complete surface area of the world. So now it becomes a matter of having the physical hardware to make the connection rather than depending on your country to put together billions of miles of phone wire and switching circuits.
But what do you think that's going to do to the world, Steve, when the whole world is totally navigable as a technomad, when you can get a log on at Timbuktu or wherever?
Well, it's sure going to shed light on a lot of things that we currently see as backwaters, isn't it? You know, from the perspective of the traveler, I think it just makes a lot more places accessible. From the perspective of people who have been cut off by the lack of available technology, suddenly they'll have the option to jump in and sort of fast forward themselves, or however, whatever direction you think that might mean, into all this information that's flying around. I see it as much of a sea change in the overall flavor of the world as the internet itself, actually, because it really does mean global connectivity is now just only involves a piece of hardware rather than a huge investment.
Steve, you know a lot of people on the net, and you say you've got, I guess, made lots of friends through your technomadic travels, but how do you really know they're your friends when all you know of them is just your log-on interaction?
It's difficult to express just how subtle that can be. There are people who I've had email contact with who I developed an immediate instinctive dislike for. Others, quite the opposite, people who I've come to know and respect very closely. And the thing that makes me feel okay about that is that as I've been traveling and visiting the people who I've found intriguing, I've found in actually all cases that I can think of, it's always reinforced my online perceptions. The basis is good communications. You know, it's not like walking into a bar and seeing somebody's eyes light up across the room and having a drink together. It's a completely different thing. Brain-to-brain contact, even if it is limited to the rather clumsy process of keystrokes, can convey an incredible amount of information.
So I guess you visit them in the end. Perhaps you feel that need for that physical communication connection.
Yes, I would never be satisfied sitting all by myself on a desert island communicating with the world only through the net. Some people can, I think, and that's great. But the reason I'm combining all these things into one is it lets me have both the visceral physical interaction as well as the freedom to wander all over the place electronically.
Thank you, Steve Roberts and Adam Sabir, for joining me on this technomadic meandering tonight.
Well, my pleasure.
Thank you.
Adam Sabir from the Australian Film, Television and Radio School. His documentary, Technomad, A Virtually Verite Journey, premieres this weekend at the Sydney Fringe Festival. And Steve Roberts, the original Technomad, speaking from his Technomadic research laboratories based in USA. But who knows where we'll find him next, eh? Well, you can certainly find him on the internet at his virtual home, which is at the address www.microchip.com. I'm Natasha Mitchell. It's late, it's night, and it's loud. And to take us a few decibels higher, let me introduce you to Morganics, Elf Transporter,